Magic, music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 2015. Austin.
Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and we are driving on our way from Houston, Texas to Austin. It's not that far, just a few hours away, so it is an easy drive, and I'm here with some of my easy friends. Kathy and I are traveling with Don and Joyce Weiberg, who are here visiting from Chicago, and we've already stopped by Dunkin' Donuts and had our fix of coffee and donuts, and so now we have clear sailing from here to Austin, and just want to say hello to Don. Hey there, Don.
Yeah, we're whipping down the highway here.
Whoops. And I hope this can be edited. I'm a man of few words. Anyway, we're having a nice leisurely ride, and I'm sitting in the jump seat watching Scott navigate the traffic, although the traffic has kind of eased and abated since we got out of the Houston area. But we're just passing the sign for the Flying J, one of our favorite gas stations, to accommodate motorhomes. And we have a motorhome that we travel infrequently. And what else can we tell you about the roadway here? Okay, I'm going to turn it back to Scott. Here he is.
But this is your first TAOM that you've attended.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's our first TAOM. It's always been on Labor Day, and when we were working many, many years ago, Labor Day was kind of the end of the summer. It was day after Labor Day, went back to the classroom, and it was all kind of difficult to get away on that weekend.
Well, sure, as a teacher, yeah, that you are trying to get back to school, certainly. And also, as I understand, that the Houdini weekend up in Appleton, Wisconsin is the same weekend, Labor Day week. And for those overseas who don't know Labor Day, that is a holiday, or a bank holiday, I guess the English would call it, here for the U.S., in which that we are celebrating laborers, I guess. But anyhow, they have the Houdini Convention, which is always the same weekend, isn't that right?
That's correct, yes. The Labor Day weekend. Labor Day weekend always kind of signified the end of summer, although the weather remains warm in the Midwest well into October and almost sometime into November. But psychologically, that Labor Day weekend is kind of the end of the summer vacations.
And you've attended the Houdini Convention, actually won some of the contests, haven't you?
I've won close-up, and I won the stage contest one year.
And that was something Hank Morehouse, I think, used to sponsor. Wasn't he one of the big organizers on that?
No. Hank had nothing to do with that. Oh. It's kind of a specialized group. Oh, Ed Litt, John Kurtz, Ron Fable. Bob Rath is involved in that. Those are my friends from... Oh, of course, Dick Mossy has been a longtime member. Dick is a good friend. In fact, they just named the IBM ring in Milwaukee after Richard Mossy.
And Dick Mossy, as with you, as a past international president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And how long has the Houdini been going? And it's only named Houdini because that's his hometown of Appleton, I guess.
That's correct. The convention is in Appleton this year. It kind of bounces around the state. Sometimes it's in it's been in Madison. It's been in Appleton. It has also been on one of the at one of the casinos. Offhand, I can't remember the name, but because of Houdini's connection to Appleton, Wisconsin, and at one time they had the Houdini Museum at the Outagamie Museum, which is Outagamie County, and so hence the organization, the Houdini Club, was founded in kind of to honor Harry Houdini.
I'm anxious, after you've attended the TAOM, to kind of compare the two to see how this compares with that. But traditionally, the TAOM has had very large attendance. Traditionally, it has had 500 to 1,000. We haven't had 1,000 attendees at our convention, though, golly, since 2000. And since then, it's kind of gone down, as have a lot of conventions. But I was thinking the Houdini Convention is really more like a couple hundred people or 150 or so. How big is it?
Yeah, it's once again, like so many other regional conventions, it has diminished in numbers. I recall attending on many occasions, wouldn't it be 250, 300 people? And of late, if they get 150, I think they're doing good.
But it's the same type of general format, I guess, as most conventions, where they've got dealer shows, contests, that kind of a thing.
Yes, pretty much so. Yeah. And they have a banquet, a banquet that kind of wind up the festivities on the Sunday of the weekend, and that's when they make the awards presentations.
Yeah. Well, I guess the reason I was thinking that Hank was involved with that is because I'd asked him many times about why he hadn't come down and been a dealer at the TAOM or ever attended one. He said because he's always involved with the Houdini collection or convention. So that's why I thought. But I guess he was a dealer up there. Well, anyhow, we, as we said, are on our way, and this should be another exciting convention. And the theme is, Magic, weirdness, and women. Magic and music. That's it. Magic, music, weirdness, and women is the theme. And Trixie Bond is the president, who is, I think, only our second female president of the TAOM. And I understand we have about 350 or so registrants this year, but we'll find out more details once we get there. Anyhow, I'm kind of excited to go. I hope you guys are getting excited to listen to the rest of this podcast, see who all that we get a chat with here this weekend. And so until later, that was Don Weiberg. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we've arrived in Austin, and one of the first people I think that we need to talk with, of course, is the head organizer. That would be the lady in charge, and that is Trixie Baum as the president. How are you?
I'm good, Scott. It's going to be quite a weekend.
Tell me about some of the stuff we got planned.
Well, of course, it's magic, music, weirdness, and women. We have plenty of all of that.
I've got that jingle ringing in my mind.
Good. You know, we had some jingles professionally produced by Jam Production, who does jingles for radio, TV stations all over the country.
Yeah.
So those will be playing during our shows, or before, not during the shows, but before,
sure.
And for our pre-show music. Tonight is Friday. Today is Friday, September the 4th, and Scott Berry is lecturing at the moment
as we speak.
Yeah. So this is going to be brief.
Yeah.
And then the big event tonight is the gala show with MC Robert Bax, a FISM winner, Bob Fitch, Peter Samuelson, Mark Merchant, the ventriloquist.
Wow.
Yes.
It's just a big show right out of the chute.
Yes.
As they say.
I hope people get here in time. And then tomorrow, I have lectures going on all day, a live school show by Oscar Munoz. We're going to have lots of children in the audience for him to do that. And then we'll escort the kiddos out, and he'll do a lecture on kid shows. And then tomorrow evening is, of course, the Women in Magic gala.
That's Saturday. So people who are coming in Saturday, if they hear this podcast, they should come in.
Yeah, 8 o'clock.
Yep.
And we do have tickets available to the public. And they're available online, taom.org/2015. You'll find the little public ticket button. Just push it and buy some tickets.
And you're talking about youth also. I don't want to forget Magic Camp.
Yes, Magic Camp starts Saturday and Sunday, run by the Fantastic Magic Camp out of Austin, Texas.
That's all day, like 9 to 4?
9 to 4, and all sorts of different activities and performers popping in,
what
teaching the kids. It starts at 5 to 12.
Okay.
You have to be 5 to go in. But I did want to mention on the women's show tomorrow evening, we're going to have Jade, who just this week was on Penn and Teller Fool Us.
Right.
So it's quite a deal.
Yes.
And Sunday, we have Ray Anderson at Esther's Follies, all sorts of fall draw.
That's a great thing, because we're going to be having buses taking people down there and back, so
right.
We'll have two separate groups. I know he's got some special things planned that he doesn't normally do as part of
that's
Esther's
right.
Follies.
That's right. There's more magic than normal
that's
in this
right.
show.
Yes.
So,
and music will be going on. When you say magic and music, there'll be little bands in between from time to time in the lobby. We'll be hearing live groups.
That's correct. Just before the show, every show, after lectures, you're going to have live music all throughout the hotel.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
That's good. Well, we'll keep in touch. I'll touch base with you sometime during the convention or towards the end to kind of see how you're doing. But you got a lot of things lined up. This is great. Congratulations on a job that I know has been well planned, and it is in the process of being well done.
Austin, Texas has a fabulous group of workers.
Oh, boy, do they.
Boy.
Sure.
And they're easy and nice to work with.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott.
That was Trixie Bond for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out.
Magic, music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 20.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it's still Friday, and just before I started to walk into J. Scott Berry's lecture that I happen to see a couple of other good best friends over here, Ken Scott and Oscar Munoz. Good to see you guys.
Hey, guys. Hello. How's everybody doing?
Yeah, these guys are some hard workers, and if you guys have never been to Atlanta's Harvest of Magic, that Ken's the guy who's behind that, and if you ever want to be a contestant, you're going to have to go through
IBM,
Oscar.
Yeah.
He's going to be the one. You need to go to the IBM to be a competitor, to see if you can be good enough
to win. Which was great this year at IBM,
it was.
I must say.
Thank
Oscar.
You. Yeah, I think the guy who booked the talent was awesome, too.
Who would that have been?
I think it was...
Oh, that was Ken Scott. That's right.
We're all munching up to each other right now.
Yeah. I can't hear people less.
That was a good convention. Now, this convention, both of you guys are going to be doing something special also, that you're going to be doing... I was just talking to Trixie. You're doing a school show thing.
Yes, I'm doing
How does that work?
Show.
I mean, how are they bringing in all the kids? Are they busting in kids?
I have no idea. Just hope they have kids.
Okay. And so you're actually going to do the show, then you're going to say, get out of here, and then you're going to talk about it?
I've got about a 30-minute show that I'm going to do for the kids.
Yeah.
And then we're going to discuss why things work and why you don't have to go buy new props and stuff. You mostly have it already there.
Yeah. Things that are already in your...
Yeah, in the drawer that you bought and you put in a drawer that you never used and realize, oh, I could use that. So,
Right. And are you going to be working also with the contestants here in the...
I am running backstage. I am the producer of both of the shows. I'm doing the tech and sound light cues and stuff.
For the evening shows?
For the evening shows.
Okay,
good. That's my job title this time.
Okay, so you have something else to do.
Yeah. Oscar never settles down. He's always working.
I got a kid I got to put through college.
And this pays so well.
Yes, exactly.
That'll do it.
Yeah, I call my son my retirement plan, so I have no choice.
he will help you. That's right. And Ken, you're going to be giving a lecture too.
Yeah, like I think 6 a.m. in the morning.
Well, usually a.m. is a good time for the morning.
Is that what it is? No, I think my we're doing a show tonight.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited about being a part of. And then tomorrow morning I do my lecture, which was intended to be a library show, but I don't think we're going to have kids here at 8:45 in the morning.
It's going
to be a talk about how I structure a library show, how I write a library show, and how people can get into the library market. Mm-hmm. So that'll be at 8:45 on Saturday, which is Friday today. So tomorrow morning. So no party tonight. I'm sure we'll be in the bed by at least 2 in the morning, I would say.
But if they haven't catched the lecture, he rocked the house at the IBM with his lecture. Mm-hmm. And so
heard a lot of great things about it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was fun, but so I just got finished wrapping up my library summer tour, so it's still fresh in the mind. So,
sure. Now, libraries are completely different from what school shows are.
The beauty of the library show is that I can do my library show and test it out 90 times in 2 months and then get it prepared for school shows starting in August. So it's a
transition.
It's a good show to get ready for the school market.
And the library shows, you have much smaller groups, obviously, and you're going to be working in a smaller library as opposed to the gymnasium.
Yeah, but I'm still going to do the same material. So I'm working on the same material I'm working out and getting
same
ready.
Same length of time, what, 30, 40
45
minutes?
Okay. Yeah, so it's just a perfect way to get all the kinks, the bugs worked out of it.
But in a library show, don't you have like kids from 5 to 15 as opposed to schools where you're going
to
be having like, Oscar, you'd be having
pre-K
like...
Pre-K to 5?
You're going to have like elementary...
I work from pre-K to high school.
Okay. Yeah, but they're not all at the same time. And my point is, library shows, you would have all of them at the same time. So it's kind of hard. I would think harder for a library show than it would be a school show.
No, it's not harder because I write a show because you also got to remember that I like doing my library shows where it showcases the kindergarten kid to the 12-year-old, plus the mom's going to be there. So I want to be booked by moms for birthday parties there. So it's a showcase for me to get booked at other events. So I want to put a show together that everyone's going to enjoy it. So at the library show, that's what happens when I put the show together for that.
But I know when you're entertaining children who are 5, that they react differently than kids who are 15, obviously.
You just got to put things in there for everybody.
There you go. Exactly. Like a regular family show, because adults are going to be there at the library with their kids then as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you throw in things, by the way, in your school shows, Oscar, for adults? In other words, I know the teachers are there. Mm-hmm. You're not there to necessarily entertain them, but they're the ones who are booking you, and you want to have them come back.
Exactly.
So do you include them or have them come up on stage?
I don't bring teachers up on stage because most of the teachers are they don't want to be embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I don't want to embarrass my audience. I do make references. I do double entendres that teachers will get in their heads and stuff. But my goal is to make sure that the subject, whatever I'm talking about, gets across and the magic is there at the same time. Because usually the persons that book you are your counselors. So if you work directly with the counselors, then you get the message across. They're happy. Everybody's happy. And they're the ones that rebook you.
Well,
sometimes teachers forget, though. They'll see me like the fourth, fifth year in the row and goes, oh, we saw him again. It's going to be again. But they don't realize that I'm not doing it for the teachers. I'm doing it for the kids.
Right.
You know, so.
I know with school shows, certainly, that you have to have a theme. Do you have to have that with the library when you go in?
Well, it's important for me, too, because they do have a theme, and most of the states are all the same theme. I think Texas is the one that is still on
well,
their
we
own.
Just, we just got on board with
okay. So yeah. Now they're on board. So now it's a theme that's kind of across the whole country.
Did they start with the same thing in the whole country?
Like this year was it was a superhero theme.
Right. And so you would be doing this in Georgia like we do it in Texas.
Exactly.
The same. I got you. Interesting.
So and then I try to write a show that's kind of geared towards the theme. And the librarians appreciate you going the extra yard, fitting into their theme. So it's just it's extra good PR for yourself when you do that instead of coming in just doing a straight up magic show.
Right. It's like I've seen magicians do anti-drug presentations at schools. They go, they do a trick, and they just say no. It has nothing, just nothing to yeah. do with what you're trying to get
it's
across.
It's like trade shows. We have three rings, you know, quality service and
right, yeah, right, right, yeah. yeah. But yeah, but not even here. At least they're trying to you know, kind of link everything together. Pardon the pun, but. I've seen some magicians who don't take that extra mile and develop
actually
a trick.
Scripted, yeah.
Yeah, they just say, here's a rabbit, just say no.
Like, but you don't have the same kinds of themes necessarily that are mandated by the state. You go in with them trying to pitch for an example that, whether it's anti-drug or bullying or whatever it is.
But I try to work with the counselors to create teaks to work off what they're trying to teach them. Like, for instance, if they ask you for bully, I always qualify. I always qualify the what is their definition of a bully.
Mm-hmm.
Because some teachers or some counselors have different definitions of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
So if I work with them and find, okay, this is what they want to teach them. I don't want to go in there and contradict what bully is. So many people think that bullying is, a lady would say, oh, they're bullying my daughter. Well, what are they doing to your daughter? They don't like her dress.
Okay.
Well, that's not bullying.
Yeah.
That's just being kids.
Yeah.
You know, bullying is constant.
So do you try to point things out like that? I mean, those nuances?
Right.
Do you, seriously, really?
Yeah.
Huh, okay.
Yeah,
because so you're saying this, you tell the kids this is bullying, so you're saying this is the level that it's okay, acceptable.
Yeah, well, not really acceptable, it's definition.
Definition, okay, that makes sense.
Because so many people have different definitions for bullying,
sure.
You know, but we have to have the standard of what bullying is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a kid says, I don't like your shoes,
yeah.
Well, that's not bullying, that's just kids being kids.
But if you're going to be going into a school and asking both of you guys, and you have a particular theme that you're going to go with, and they say, well, we just had somebody, or we did this last year, you know, we really are thinking this year about this, and then you usually say, yes, I can do that, or what is your... I mean,
you try to work with them because you want, the ultimate, you want to work.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've both been in long enough that we, I think now if I know the theme out, I can start thinking, I can sell the show and put it
on
together.
On your feet right there.
Oh my! Well, not put the show together right then and there.
No, but I mean, as far as trying to sell
exactly.
the show to the
right.
to the buyer.
Yeah.
Well, we have it. But we already have, because we worked so long, we already have stuff in our heads and our minds and our canned stuff that we can, you know, put it in our show.
Mm-hmm.
If they say, if we walk in, I ask them, so what are you guys talking about this year? Oh, we had problems last week. We had somebody right on those school walls. Well, then I can go and talk about respecting your house.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you pull out tricks that you already had in the past or can be used to that subject.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, would you let, you know, and you can do various tricks that will emphasize not riding on the school walls or respecting mm-hmm. the property or respecting your home. You know.
So when you're approaching these guys, do you normally go like 6 months, a year in advance, or how far in advance do you try to book your shows for schools?
Well, for me, they're already booking.
Yeah.
Okay.
This
year, I would say.
2015, 2016, yeah.
Sure. They're already booking.
Okay. And libraries?
And libraries are, I'm 70% booked for next year.
Next summer, the whole summer.
For next summer, yeah.
Okay.
Which is a good problem to have.
Now,
yeah.
Do you just strictly then, can work in Georgia with the libraries?
I do.
Because there are enough libraries all around, I would think.
Yeah, I stay in Georgia.
I make sure he stays in Georgia.
And you stay in San Antonio.
Yeah,
right?
I do all of
there
Texas.
There are a lot there, yeah.
Texas is a lot bigger than Georgia.
That's right. Well, yeah, San Antonio is bigger than Georgia.
But I have connections that keep him from coming to Texas.
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
Yeah.
But he's serious.
Yeah. Wink, wink, yeah. Listen, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We'll talk some more as the thing goes.
Looking forward to it.
That was Ken Scott and Oscar Munoz for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out.
Music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 2015.
Don't do that.
Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. And I have with me someone who has been in a lot of contests. And in particular, not only has he been in them, but he has won. I am now with 7-time award winner, mainly of comedy, for the Tech Association Magician, Mr. Fumio Inagaki. Hey there, Eric.
Hello, how are you doing, sir?
Fantastic. And
howdy, ma'am.
Howdy. No, it's konnichiwa, isn't it? That sounds like you're
Don't
you're
touch
sneezing.
My mustache.
That's right. You taught my boys that. Don't touch my mustache. That's what you said.
You are what?
Speak Japanese.
Don't touch
way.
Mustache.
Don't touch. And that means thank you? Or what does that mean?
You're welcome.
Don't touch your mustache.
Don't touch my mustache.
Yeah, don't you wash your... Okay, got it.
I know Fumio as Eric. That was his Anglicized name when we first got to know each other back in Midland, Texas, back
1983.
Wow, so that's 30 years ago.
And, yeah. Yeah, and I met you, and then you started me the magic. What is this? Magical world, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
Magical world.
It is a whole world, and you're in Japan, actually. But you were living in Odessa
Tokyo.
At the time. You were living
in 27 years. I lived in Odessa, Texas.
Yep, and you were working as an oculist. You were grinding lenses.
Optician.
Optician, sorry. There's a difference. What's the difference between optician?
Oh, lab technician is I was once making eyeglass lenses and everything.
Yeah.
Then I started working for doctor as an optician.
Mm-hmm.
But I did both, taking care of a patient as well as making eyeglasses.
Yeah. Now, another thing, the reason I wanted to chat with you here briefly is because a lot of the listeners out there do not know the origins of some things that they do that they think is actually part of public domain as far as some jokes or things that they may say. And there's been one particular trick that has become a part of magic history and legend, and it is part of what you would call public domain. That's the UPC gag.
Mm-hmm.
And the barcode gag.
And
Fumio, or Eric, was the one who had actually had come up with this idea.
1984. And first one is I gave to Tom Ogden out of Los Angeles. And then I have won a special merit in 1985 IBM
in the Lincoln Rams
contest. Yeah, that's what I'm recognized for.
I remember at that time when you had submitted that to the Lincoln Ring, and Phil Wilmarth had asked me about this. He said, I don't know that this is an original thing because Tom Ogden is actually doing it. I said, let me tell you the story. Mm-hmm. That Fumio gave that to Tom to kind of see if there's actually a market, if it really is funny as what we think it is. And tell me about that, how that went.
Well, what happened was I called him up and said, well, somebody else is doing it, or Tom Ogden.
And the reason you had Tom's because he'd come through Midland.
True.
For a lecture.
So what I came up with the idea, I went to see Tom Ogden in Los Angeles. And Tom was performing at the Knott's Berry Farm.
Mm-hmm.
I went to see him, and after he finished it, we went to the parking lot. And I showed to Tom Ogden about barcode gag.
Yeah.
I did to him. He goes, wow. Then according to him, he took it to Max Maven. And Max Maven said to Tom, why didn't I think about that? You know, because he's a mind reader.
Yeah.
So I submitted to the idea to the 1985 IBM convention Originality Contest. And
right.
But I didn't get call from them for a long time. So I was wondering, and I called him, Phil. They said, well, somebody else was already doing a contest, and I think he's got the idea from Tom Ogden.
Mm-hmm.
I said, please call Tom Ogden. I'm the one gave to him. So I guess they called Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Tom told him about me.
Mm-hmm.
Then I officially I won the special merit.
That's
story is.
And so that goes back again to 1983. So those of you
1885.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, when you guys are wondering about the origins of some of those things. And so how did that actually come up in your mind? What made you?
Well, I went to a grocery store and I bought me a sneaker.
Yeah.
And I was living in Odessa, Texas, a small town, and the first time I ever seen that beep, thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, why this machine can tell price and what I bought and everything. That's when I
thought, hey,
this would be funny. It's a gag,
Well, you've got so many different ideas, certainly, and you won the contest 7 times. Have they all been stage comedy that you won for, or close-up?
Yes.
Or
no.
Close-up?
That's what I'm doing, a close-up, because, I'm from Tokyo, and all the way from Tokyo, and I want to do something.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm trying to be original.
Well, the ideas you've had in the past, I think, to me, you were the first person who used a Kentucky Fried Chicken box.
Put the egg in the microwave oven, and that's come from my own experience. You're not supposed to put the raw egg in the microwave and oven to make a hard-boiled egg. It really explodes.
Yeah.
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 That's when I got the idea to put rubber chicken and produce the egg, and then put the egg in the microwave oven, and, you know, boom. Right?
You certainly learned a lot through experience. I remember.
And the Kentucky Fried Chicken came out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and had the box in the Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah, that's right. I think that was before that Johnny East Palmer started using that box for his little chicks and everything.
So, you know, I certainly try to be original and it's something that I can enjoy myself and also the audience can enjoy. And like last week I was in Magic Castle and of course everybody knows that, Jack Goldfinger, you know, and Goldfinger and Dove. Mm-hmm. And he really did enjoy my show and he came to see me twice.
Yeah.
And he wants me to come back next year as well as he wants me to give them lecture.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of flattered.
And so the lecture you're going to be talking about, and I can maybe get you booked on a lecture tour around as well, is mainly about comedy and creativity.
I don't know, but you tell me.
You tell me
all the lecture, and it's going to scare me because, you know, if I were living in this country, I have my own car and da 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 da. But. You know, I have to bring it, you know.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that you're going to have to bring over.
However, I have not just a magic trick, the original magic trick, but I have an original line that I really want to share with a fellow magicians, you know. Mm-hmm. So I gave my line to mind reading comedy way, but it's really funny, and I try to Tom Ogden, and as well as Max Maven. But this time Tom Ogden came to watch my show, and it did work. It's because he knows what audience reaction was, you know. So yeah, I like not just a lecture tour that just to sell my stuff, original stuff, but also line. And I want to
talk about comedy. I said,
yeah, but it's a clever line.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If they Jack or Max or Tom Ogden will like my line, yeah, sure. I'm sure everybody can enjoy it because those people are professional people.
Sure.
They have seen so many magicians, so, you know.
Yeah.
And then.
Good, yeah. I mean, you're a creative guy. You've had a creative mind. I know years ago, back in the 80s, you'd come to me and say, hey, what do you think about this idea? Do you think it's going to work or whatever? Go with it. Man, that's funny, you know. And it,
Certainly I look up to you as a magician. And, you know, a lot of magicians and magicians are acts. And if I tell you what I came up with, a line or magic tricks, you know, introduce those lines to magic tricks. You can tell me, well, that's original, that's funny, that's no good, you know. So
got a good basic comparison.
I'm still studying. Like I was saying to my friend Jay's the guy, that I'm not a magician, I'm an entertainer.
Yeah.
But that's very important. Being an entertainer is very, very important.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're a juggler or, you know, spinning the
plates. Yeah.
It has to be a good entertainer, and then you have to give them a good entertainment.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You know that.
I do, and let me ask you that, name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast, so my question then, Eric, is to you is, what is your magic word? What is it that is important in your life? It wouldn't have to be a word,
it could
be a sentence, what is it?
Because of magic, first of all, I went to so many different places because of magic, something I can do, you know? Even when I went back to Tokyo, I got booked a cruise line over there, and I would never thought I can get on the bullet train to go places around the world. I was on cruise ship, Japanese cruise ship, and also around the Japan. Gosh, thank you, magic.
So that's your magic word, basically.
And it's fun. It's fun. And then because of my ability of speaking English, sure, I am trying hard, yet because of magic, I can entertain somewhat with my language and speaking ability-wise, but they can tell that, you know, magic is happening.
Sure.
You know, so
sure. That's great.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's a lot of stuff, a lot of funny stuff. Looking forward to seeing your show then as well over here a little bit later for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Fumio Inagaki. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we just finished the evening show. We still got more to do here this evening with a lecture that's going to be by Peter Samuelson, and then Randy Rain's going to be having a lecture. The show here this evening, it was hosted by Robert Bax, had just a great lineup with John Carney and Mark Merchant and Peter Samuelson, and very cool, great act, good act tonight. But I'm sitting next to Walter Blaney. Hey there, Walter, how are you?
Good to be with you, Scott.
Glad that we got to share a little bit of time here this evening. But before the thing began, we were kind of chatting briefly about your next project, which is your birdcage. Now, of course, you're quite famous for not only the ladder levitation, but also for your birdcage vanish and reproduction. And you are going to be eventually putting this out for sale. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it's just what I call my birdcage project.
Yeah.
The vanishing birdcage is one of the great tricks of all time. And a lot of the top magicians of the world have said so.
Yep.
And in fact, one time, John Booth, who wrote in the Linking Ring for years and years and wrote several books like Marvels of Magic, in his book Marvels of Magic, he talks about going to New York and in Manhattan at lunch. Maybe a dozen magicians would meet every day or two and have a get together.
Yeah.
And it came up in conversation. Someone said, "What do you all consider the greatest single trick in magic of all time?" And there was a pause for a moment, and one man said, "I think it's the vanishing birdcage." And the others all chimed in and said, "Exactly." And they decided more magicians have made their careers with the vanishing birdcage than any other trick.
Yep.
In all
Barry
time.
Blackstone
if
Sr. and Junior.
If it's
junior,
done well,
yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I fell in love with it when I saw Bert Allerton do it when he came to a TAM.
Now, I understand he used to do
Austin.
That close-up. Didn't he do that like a smaller birdcage? Isn't that right? I always envisioned it was a larger one.
That's what people say, but I saw it, and it was the regular size.
Full-size.
Just like, and there was a cage called the Lindhorst birdcage. It was on the market.
Will Lindhorst. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to clear the room.
Sorry, they were just telling us to leave the theater over there, so we had to come back outside. So we're talking about the Lindhorst
Yeah, Will Lindhorst was a dealer, magic shop guy in St. Louis.
Okay.
And I don't know, there's no way to know, he's long gone now.
Yeah.
But whether he himself, other than just being a good dealer and advertising props and selling in his magic shop, I don't know if he created anything himself or not. I have no way of knowing. But he put on the market a metal birdcage, and it became known as the Lindhorst cage.
Okay.
And it was a very good design thing. Somebody probably invented it, put it together right, and came to him and said, "Do you want to market this?" And he and his answer was yes, I guess, if that happened. Or he could have invented it.
I thought it went back to the 1800s. That was something that...
Oh, well, not this design.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's a certain design.
Okay.
And it was called the rigid cage.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas Abbott's put out what was called the flexible cage that was made of really thin... a flexible wire, and so you could see the cage better. It was the frame was wrapped with red ribbon, so it would show up. You'd see the actual box.
I see.
Without the ribbon,
from the stage,
you wouldn't know what he's holding there.
Okay.
You know, and so they put a rubber bird in it and used that, and that's what Blackstone Sr. used. That's what Blackstone Jr. used, and they sold a lot of those cages, and they were all used. But then out comes this sturdier. Showed up better, steel and actually aluminum and brass cage.
Yeah,
the Lindhorst cage. And I saw Bert Allerton use it and do it at a TAUM in Austin.
Yeah,
when we just after Ring 60 was formed. So this was back around 1950 or so when I saw him do it. And it was a big hit at the convention.
Yeah.
And one thing about Bert, he could stand up, reach under his coat, pull it out, and do it. And then he could repeat it.
Right there.
Yeah. And he was known for his close-up magic at the pump room of the...
Palmer House?
Palmer House. I forget the name of the hotel.
Yeah.
In Chicago.
Yes.
And all the elite would come there. Ford Motor... people, General Motors people, would bring their clients there, and they would do magic. He would be the magician that would come to their table.
Okay.
And he would get a big tip and everything. But he was just a marvelous entertainer, very suave gentleman, very top hat. And he would then reach under the table and get the cage out and open and bring it up into view and then vanish it.
And again, that was a full-size cage. That wasn't like something that was about the size of a deck of cards, because somebody told me it was smaller than you thought.
No.
Okay,
well,
okay.
That's not so.
Okay.
It was very visible.
Yeah.
And it's the size that it was the... I think someone else made it for Burt, but it was the Lindhorst cage model. Okay, so time went on, and there were certain things wrong with the cage. Wires would fall out and come apart, and so on. But I used it for years until finally I ran across a gentleman named Fred Rickard that used to be with, gosh, can you stop a second?
Yep.
So if we can go back to where that starts, okay. At any rate, Merv Taylor was a very good craftsman and put out some wonderful products. And he had a man working for him named Fred Rickard. And Fred Rickard was making these cages, essentially the Lindhorst cage. And he got so good at it, but he was making some things wrong. And so then Merv Taylor sold out to Les Smith at Owens. And along with the deal came Fred Rickard, who was making these cages, and they sold these cages for many, many years.
Yeah.
And but I corrected some things that were wrong. They had the little swivel pull device on it 90 degrees off.
Wow.
And it was wrong. And it was really a wobbly cage. And they wanted to know why I wanted it not wobbly. And I explained that. It looks real. You hold it with one hand.
You hold it with one hand, right.
And all like that. And so they've made three major corrections, and also I wanted it real shiny to show up. So then they polished the aluminum frame and used stainless steel bars, and they didn't come out because it was made right.
Okay.
And so with I said to Owens, which was Les Smith, but Fred was doing all this. At that time, I didn't know Fred was making the cages, because Les never made a cage. But at any rate, and Les was my friend back then. And so they were putting, I said, if you make these three changes, you will have the most perfect cage of all time.
Yeah.
There's no way to improve it. And so they did that, and I said, now that's the perfect cage, and I'll recommend it to everybody. Because I got to be known for the cage trick because I could repeat it, and no one knew what the gimmick was that allowed me to repeat it over and over, and essentially just wear it. Gloves, you or something. I put them on in the morning. I wear it all day long and forget it was there. But anytime I wanted to do it, or somebody says, look, you got that damn cage with you, Walter? I just reach into my coat and said, you mean this one here?
Yeah.
And then, boom, vanish it. And they go, oh, God.
In an elevator or any place?
Yeah, anywhere.
Yeah.
And there's so many birdcage stories.
Yeah, you told me you used to go, like, down in Houston, you know, from floor to floor, talking to all these different companies and everything.
Yeah,
and you used to repeat it over and over.
My show, yeah.
Yeah.
I would go into the office of a CEO or a president of an association.
Yeah.
And I would say, in Omaha, I'd have a show. Then I would go to all these offices of trade associations the next day, and I had a little map where to go, and I went from office to office to office.
Yeah.
And I'd walk in. I know these executives are busy. They don't want to see a magic show or they want to see a magician.
Right.
I'd walk in and say, I'm just here because I appeared at the XYZ convention last night. Oh, that's Joe Smith's convention. He's a good friend of mine. I said, well, good. I do a magic act. I'd like to do it at your convention.
Right.
And Joe Smith would be my best advocate because he saw me in the standing ovation.
Sure. Yeah.
Made him look good.
Yeah.
Everything. And I said, but I'll just leave my brochure because I know you're busy and you don't have time to see magic. Although, see this one picture here? It's of me holding this little bird in a cage and a couple of ladies there holding on to it.
Yeah.
Well, it vanished. And so it's a great trick. It looked kind of like this one here. And I would get it out. He didn't have time to say, no, I'm busy now. I can't watch magic now. I had the cage out, and before he could open his mouth, I said, and it would vanish just like that. He says, what the hell was that? I said, well, I'll show you. I've got another one. See, it's a little bird in the cage. and you just clap your hands and it's disappeared. And it's so visual.
Yeah.
It happens right in front of his face. He says, "That's the damnest thing I've ever seen. Could you show that to my secretaries?"
Yeah.
"Darlene, Francis, come in here and look at this." And they come in. I said, "Hi, I'm Walter Blaney. I'm a magician. And I hope we get to entertain at your magic event at your trade association convention, maybe another year. And your boss wants me to give you the bird." And they think about that. And I said, "Like this one here. And look at it. Don't blink because it goes." "Oh, yeah. My goodness, like that." And I said, "Here, I'll get another one. And this time I want you to hold on to it, Darlene. And Francis, you put your hand over here." And they're just all agog, you know.
Yeah.
And I did my little gags. I had my telescope, and I looked at the ring, the diamond in the ring, with the laughs and everything.
The whole thing, yeah.
And I said, "Here we go, on the count of three, one, two, three, boom." He said, "Oh, that's the craziest thing. Oh, my gosh. Are you open April 14th next year? If you are, you're booked."
Just like that.
"I don't need to see anything
else."
That's
it, yeah.
And that's how I sold myself.
Yeah.
And I would go to office.
But it's a solid trick, and so you've been trying to market this or put something together, but you've had a problem.
No, and so I had this invention that created where I could do it over
repeatable,
and over.
Repeatable, yeah.
And be completely free. I do the rest of the act, and Birdcage didn't bother me, or because you know it somewhere.
Right.
But nobody knew where it was. Or just, and even if they thought it went up my sleeve, I could almost prove it wasn't there.
Right. I always thought that was great when I saw it on television and everything before, where you'd have the ladies, as they were walking off the stage, they would kind of feel your arm or pick up your jacket or look around, you know. And,
well, that happened one time for real, and then it was in the act forever after.
Yeah.
Because once I vanished after I vanished the cage, boom, it's gone.
Yeah.
I take their hands and raise their hands up, and as I do it behind my arm to one lady, I'll say, "Raise my coat up and look under it, okay, right now. Look under my coat."
Yeah.
And she kind of, "What?" Yeah. And so then they're all still applauding, and she raises up my coat and looks under it, and I kind of look down, and the audience is laughing.
Yeah.
Because this vice president's wife is looking under my
jacket,
coat and feeling around and everything. And I said, "That's okay, Francis. When you get through, it's my turn."
Yeah.
And that got a big laugh.
Yeah.
And I got that gag from Bert Allerton.
Oh, funny.
He would use that gag. And I remember that.
Go ahead.
So anyway, just to make the long story short, as Edgar Bergman says, "Too late for that,
now,
Charlie." The story gets too long. I decided near the end of my career and everything to put it on the market because I had been selling the cages that Owens was selling all those years, but they weren't making them right anymore. Mm-hmm. I found out from a number of people, well-known magicians, that couldn't get
them
to collapse right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to go into that whole story.
Yeah, I understand.
But they were not interested in making a change. And I said, "You mean you're going to still sell them like that and tell people they got to be broken in?" They didn't have to be broken in.
Mm-hmm.
So I started, and I went to a very good craftsman, a good friend of mine, a great guy, still a friend, and he was halfway into the project. He made all the parts, but he couldn't put them together right.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed he didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do what you have to do. And so then I got recommended to another guy and started all over. And so those parts that the first guy meant were sent to the second guy. And he didn't have to make any parts. He just said he knew how to put them together, and he would do it. And he didn't, and he didn't, and he didn't. And all of a sudden, I realized a year and 4 more months have gone by. Now I've lost 2 years and 4 months,
mm-hmm.
and still didn't have a cage. And so I finally just had to give up. It was causing me heart trouble, strain, and high blood pressure. And my doctor said, "If you don't get rid of that stress, you're going to die."
Yeah.
So I called up the guy and said, "It's all off. You put me off too many times. I'm never going to get the cages from you." "Oh, one day soon I'll have them."
"Yeah, sure."
"Too late."
"Yeah."
"No more." So I dropped the project. And it was so sad near the end of my life not to have this cage die because nobody was going to make them right.
Right.
And so anyway, then I had have a son-in-law. Shannon's husband said, "Hey, my best friend, you know, he's an engineer and he's an inventor. He's got stuff on the market. He's really a great guy. Let's show it to him, and maybe he'll have an idea if we can make one." Because I couldn't find any magicians. I've tried. Oh, I just said, "Well, okay."
You'd have someone who doesn't think like a magician.
So this guy is real nice. He spent a lot of his own time, and he's found somebody to make the parts. and you found the guys that can put them together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent a lot of money to get two cages made.
That you're happy with?
Well,
okay.
Before we made a whole bunch,
yeah, sure.
We had to get two made. And then I finally, after, you know, 6 more months, got the first cage. And I was happy. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But there were two things wrong. And they changed that. Now they're in the process of making that second cage work.
Yeah.
So I'm just at the point, like, if they tell me they've still got more problems, then
Forget it again.
That's going to be it.
Yeah. But you've gone through a lot of troubles. I remember, I wrote the story about the hoop and the problem you had with that.
It's on that order. It's
yes.
on that order,
mm-hmm.
the hoop story.
Mm-hmm.
And but I've spent 3 years instead of 15 years.
Yeah.
But I don't have 15 more years, you know.
Well, I hope you do.
Well, I hope so, too. But anyway.
So we'll see how it turns
within
out.
Within a week or two, I will see the cage. And
yeah.
It's even got my name engraved on it. And
yeah.
Everything. Hopefully, it's going to be the world's best cage of all time.
And if so, then you
and
give
you
it
don't have to break it in.
It'll be ready to go.
But along with it, the people that buy it, and it's going to be expensive. And there's no way I'm going to make any money on this. I've spent so much.
Sure. Research and development to getting it. Yeah.
Yeah, but just to end the story, if I put it out, they will get the gimmick, the secret gimmick that
mm-hmm.
no one has figured out. And it's a simple thing,
mm-hmm.
but it's good that it's simple
mm-hmm.
because there's no big conglomerate. $2,000 little piece of apparatus
yeah.
hidden on
yeah.
you that does this.
Yeah.
But it sure works. And it's just, I was going to die and not give the secret away if I couldn't get the cages made.
Right.
Because without these cages, my gimmick is no good, you know. So I'm just right on the verge of being able to say I'm going to do this.
Right.
So we'll know pretty soon if
I'm
going to
do it. Well,
hopefully
we hear some positive outcome to end the story over here then, too.
I've worked hard enough for it.
Yes. Well,
so many people in magic have no idea how long it takes to create something and to work on it and perfect it and make it come out
right.
and put it on the market, much less make a profit.
And that's the problem, of course, with people who are ripping off things, is that someone else has done all the
yeah.
trouble and the research and development, spent the years and money
yeah.
and blood, sweat, and tears and health issues like that, and then once it's out, say, that's how it's done.
I just saw on TV, you know, America's Got Talent,
yeah.
Britain's Got Talent, all these countries have talent, similar show in the Philippines, and there's a magician that's kind of well known in the Philippines, and he did my ladder levitation,
yeah,
and it was the most god-awful thing, and he exposed it. And the whole thing, and you saw the people in the audience saying, I see how he does that.
Yeah.
And but the guy is unaware. He
yeah.
doesn't know, and he doesn't know that he doesn't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just pitiful. And the prop that he got made over there is just so bad, I just want to cringe.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me want to cry
yeah.
to see my beautiful trick just ruined by these thieves that rip people off.
Right.
And they haven't a clue that they're not doing it
care.
Right.
Yeah.
That he's exposing it.
Right.
And it's just
very disappointing, frustrating.
It is, and it makes and all the guys that invent and produce, well, even recently, Jeff McBride had his whole act stolen, you know. And he doesn't like that.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't. And he spoke out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a lot of clout. And what he says means a lot to a lot of people.
Sure.
He's so good. And but he complained about that. And
mm-hmm.
when things are stolen, it's just really unfair to the creators who have spent so much time and effort and money and frustration to get something on the market.
That's why you formed the World Alliance of Magicians many years ago.
Exactly.
Of course, trying to...
Yeah,
yes.
that, mm-hmm. one of the two tenets was, you know, not to give the secrets away like Valentino did,
mm-hmm.
and the other was to respect the magicians who create magic,
right?
Or create their act,
yeah.
and not copy the act or copy the trick,
right?
Without permission.
Well, yeah, anyway, very frustrating. Well, good. Thank you very much. It's good to hear that story, and that again, we'll kind of watch for that. And once
well,
it does, I guess we'll be
goosebumps thinking about next week, and we're going to find out if I get the cages made.
Yes. Well, I know a lot of people will be interested in learning the secret and buying those.
Maybe until
available.
They hear the price.
Because
I don't want to lose half my... I may lose half my savings.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's going to be more than $1,500, I'm assuming.
I imagine, yeah.
Okay.
I have not gotten the price, and yet I've ordered 50.
Yeah.
And spent all this money to make all the dies,
so we'll
to
see.
Make the parts,
yeah.
And go through, you know, another...
But once that somebody has that, they'll have a reputation maker, just as it may
yeah,
be for you,
I
too.
Mean,
you
know? It will, whatever the price is, it's gonna, it'll be cheap in the long run.
Good point.
For what it will give the magician that
That's right.
wants to learn it.
Great. Walter, thank you very much. I appreciate
My pleasure.
Your dedication to magic and also to this project that you have with the, all the others, and giving your life and yeah. soul, it seems like.
And once I do the birdcage thing, then I'll get back to writing my book.
There we go. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Okay. I'll tell you one thing about my book.
Yeah, please do.
I've got it half written, and I've got so much more to tell.
Yeah.
But this birdcage thing is just taking up all my time.
Yeah.
But
you can focus on one or the other.
So my story is that people learn, oh, you're a magician, you've done this. Oh, really? All that? And I said, yeah. In fact, I've had a wonderful life, 60 years in show business.
Yeah.
And I'm writing a book about my memoirs. And but I've got a problem. As the author of my autobiography, I've got a short-term memory loss. Mm. I can remember everything I did in the past.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what I did today.
Yeah. Well,
but,
I know
but it's okay, because tomorrow I can write about today.
Today. Oh.
That's a joke.
I like that. Very good. Thank you, Walter, very
my
much.
My pleasure. Thank you,
Walter Zaney Blaney for the Magic Word Podcast.
Always this a pleasure, my friend.
Scotty L. Music, British and women, TAOM 2015. Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and one of the stars of the Friday night opening show is Mr. Mark Merchant and company. And I've got the guy who's the voice behind the vents right here. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hi, Scott Wells. It's good to see you. And what a great radio voice. I mean, you come on like you're going to put this on the air or something.
Eventually,
you know?
I will. Matter of fact, this will be up tomorrow morning, so that way that people, whenever I'm at magic conventions, I update every day, so that way people who are not here have a sense and a feel as if that they're actually here. And some people who are coming that might have missed this night, they will be here tomorrow, and they'll know what happened here this evening. So
if they miss tonight's show, I think I just go ahead.
No, it was really great.
And my life. There'd be no reason to, you know.
It was a good show from start to finish, and it was just a solid act, and everyone just seemed to get better and better. I don't know if they get better and better, but they're all just at a high level, the top of the plateau over here.
Well, thank you. I was proud to be part of the show.
I was excited to see Scott Land's new puppet that you were using then, because he's been, and Lisa have been posting that picture of Joel Osteen, you know, for a while.
The Reverend Wonderful, yes.
That's right. And so this, how long have you actually been working with? You've had it for what? Less than a month, right?
I've had him for less than a month, yes.
Yeah.
I got him on August the 7th.
Yeah, and so this is one of the...
This is the third appearance that he made, and I will say with all modesty,
yeah.
his most successful.
Okay.
I brought him on at Abbott tonight after I got him, and yeah. I just really didn't have a feel for him. Plus, I'm not sure people recognized him.
And well, they do here in Texas.
And then
you
I
know,
had
of course,
a,
he's in Houston.
Right.
You know.
I had a show... in Savannah, or St. Simon's Island, I beg your pardon, last Friday for a convention, a corporate date, and I brought him out, and people liked him, but tonight I felt like...
Yeah. Are you going to continue to use him as the name of Joel Osteen, or are you going to be having a different name, so he's going to be just an evangelist type of a pastor or something, and people say, you know, he looks like Joel.
But I've thought of that. I've thought of that, mm-hmm. Scott, and my wife has said, you know, you don't want to offend, you know, people. Who, and I like Joel Osteen, I'll mm-hmm. say for the record. I'll also say for the record, I'm a Christian. My wife and I listen.
I know that.
My wife and I listen to Joel Osteen, and I believe and declare with all my heart that if Joel Osteen saw this, that he would laugh.
Oh, I think he would, too. He would. I mean, and of course, a lot of the inside jokes, people who do listen to him say, well, you know, I like to start with a joke, and he always gets
right.
different things you say, of course, like with that. But I was just thinking that for when you say that some people may not know who he is, who don't watch, they knew who an evangelist is over there, certainly.
I got something for you.
But, hey, Nick. Nick Lewin, another guy came by. That's right. We're just chatting. Hey, Nick, so I want to say hello.
Hey, hello.
I got something for you.
You do a right, great show.
Thank you.
He's leaving tomorrow, so you don't want him to leave. He's leaving tomorrow, so you want to make sure you check with him.
You're an interview, right?
Okay, yeah.
How long will you be?
Probably just a few more minutes.
Okay.
All right, come on back out. Okay. So I was just saying, for those people who don't know who he is, I think that if you call him somebody else, they will kind of get some of the inside jokes if you just kind of refer to Joel Osteen without calling him that.
And I've thought about making him a motivational speaker with that Joel sort of flair.
Yeah.
And So as
you don't have the accent with him that you're using, you know, as far as that, trying to have more of a southern accent.
I'm trying to get, you know, hold up your Bible and say it like you mean it. This is my Bible. I am what. Hold up your Tarbell course. Yeah, say it like you mean it. Don't work cruise ships without getting paid. You hear that? Don't work cruise ships without getting paid.
Very funny.
Very funny. Very honest. Yes.
I understand where you're preaching from there.
That's the fifth commandment.
I was doing a lecture at the Magic Castle, and someone had asked in the audience about that. I said, well, let's talk about that offline.
Yes, you know? yes.
Well, anyhow, so going back over then to some of the others, that's your newest one that you had, and so you have written a lot of lines and everything. When you're writing for a puppet as a ventriloquist, do I'm sure it's trial and error, but you've got like a character in mind for this person and how they would speak, I assume.
Yes.
And so do you kind of talk to yourself when you're
I do talk to myself, and I talk with a comedy writer in Seattle named Tim Hunter, who helps me out. He's the only guy who works for me now, and he works for other people, but I called him tonight literally an hour before the show running some of the Joel lines that I wrote.
Yeah.
And I said, it's a magic convention and I want people to talk about believing, and he said, I've got a great joke for you. Do you believe the Astros are in first place? Yeah. I didn't even know that, and I got a good laugh.
I'm from Houston. I didn't follow it. I didn't know that either, so I was so yeah, it was a good laugh from sports enthusiasts. How about the Tarbell? You know, hold up your Tarbell. Magicians would do that too.
Right.
In that case, whenever you're on cruises and you're doing something like that, what do you say? Just hold up your programs?
I'm going on a cruise. I fly to Iceland tomorrow to get on the Crystal Symphony, and Joel will be making his first appearance ever on a cruise ship.
Okay.
So, but due to political correctness, some of my other characters have been shortened, my black puppet and my Asian puppet.
And Wingtip Shoe, yeah.
Wingtip Shoe can still come out, but he's been modified. He doesn't look quite as cartoonish now.
Okay. Yeah, I wondered, that was something in which that seems like that the more politically correct we get, that the harder I think it would be for you, the type of act that you have had with some of the lines and interactions that you've had.
And
then you had a good line, well, my wife is black, well, my wife is Asian.
Anybody
have a nice
who knows me knows that I'm not a racist.
You and I have been friends for I don't know how long. I know when you're not, and I think that's important. It's on the record that people know that you're not racist, you're not against people who have alternate lifestyles or anything. You know?
No.
Yeah, right.
I have an alternate lifestyle. Nick Lewin and I, we had a relationship for a long... How long were we married?
I think it was about 5 years. Seemed longer, though.
Yeah. And but that was out the sanction of actual marriage.
I wasn't wearing my dresses.
You know, when you're, that'd be a cross dresser, right? A CrossFit dresser. I just wore them to work out.
Just work out, yeah, CrossFit dresser. It's true. And so,
wow. Thank you.
Just, really nice.
Thank you, sir.
So, anyhow, you're getting ready to head out to sea then tomorrow. So you're
I joined the
tonight,
Crystal
so
Symphony.
Yeah. Okay.
And there'll be somebody, I'll be doing ventriloquism. I'm not going to say any more because I've already said too much about people working for free, but I'll be there.
Okay. And let me just say, as we start to close, because I'll let you run because I know you got a lot of stuff to prepare for. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word? What is your life? What's important? What is your philosophy of life?
Passion.
Okay.
Passion.
Good.
You got to be passionate about what you do.
And you seem to be. You know, and one thing that I've always enjoyed, Mark, about your performances, and I've worked with you in the past when we know each other, and that is the topicalness, if you will. I always feel like
if you
have things that are new, and like you just said about the Astros winning and things like that, that you have some things that are ripped from today's headlines almost type of a thing. So it's not something that is old or dated or sounds something like Charlie McCarthy type of stuff that are stock lines by any means. Everything is new and fresh, and I've always admired you.
Thank you.
Keeping on top of that with all that then, too. So, good job.
And our mutual friend Billy McComb told me in 1983, he said, lad, you've got your work cut out for you doing that topical material because you got to update it all the time. It's not an evergreen.
Yeah.
You know, a joke about, a Clinton joke still works, you know, because, you know, it's 1992
but
all over again.
Some things like the Wiener jokes or whatever, you know, they last for a week or two. Whenever it's no longer in vogue, then you've got to move on. And you've
got
to let these things go as good as they might be.
True.
That's a tough thing. When you say also, Nick, it's hard to let go of some joke.
It's hard
to let
go of a Wiener.
What?
It's hard to let go of your Wiener.
That's right.
We're speaking of Anthony.
That's right.
Yes, they begged him.
I'm sorry.
They begged him not to run, but he was determined to stick it out.
Have another martini. Okay. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, Scott.
On the Magic Word Podcast. That was Mark Merchant. And chiming in, of course, is Nick Lewin. Scotty
Allen. Magic, music, weirdness, and women. T-A-O-N.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and everybody is showing up and already here, and Mandy Farrell is here, and I shouldn't say Farrell, it's now Mandy Nico, who is married to Roger. Congratulations, and again.
Thank you.
And you surprised everybody at the 4F convention by getting married, and who was it that did the ceremony?
Jimmy C.
Jimmy C. was.
Yes.
And he was the only other one who knew about this was coming. Obi didn't know about it or anything.
Obi had no idea. Joan knew, Obi knew, oh, Obi didn't know. Joan knew.
Joan Caesar knew.
Yes,
yeah.
And so did Christian.
Yeah, Christian Schenck.
He knew as well.
Okay.
But apart from that, nobody knew.
And so whenever that happened, did everybody think that that was just going to be a goof and it was just a joke and you were going to do some magic trick or something?
Yes, they did. It was set up like it was going to be a magic trick, and then suddenly it was a wedding. And then people started to get their cameras out and film it, and everybody was gasping. Yeah, it was a real surprise.
They wish they would have had, like, champagne to pop or something.
It was a real surprise, yeah. It was great. Fantastic.
That was something that was hard to keep a secret from magicians, but you actually were successful. You know, magicians are the worst people, it seems like, at keeping secrets.
Yes.
But you guys have kept that very well to the very end, it seems like, over there.
Yes, we did, yeah. No, it was great.
And now, you've been in England all your life, and Roger's been over in Buffalo, and so he's going to be moving over then with you, is that correct?
He is, yes, by the end of the year.
And he's going to be operating the Card Shark East, I guess, from there, still working with
Christian. He will still
Christian.
Be working with Christian, yes, absolutely.
Will there be a representative in the U.S. who is going to be marketing here?
I can't tell you, though. It's a secret. And I'm a magician, and I keep my secrets.
You're proven already how well you can keep those secrets, so
yes,
we don't know
I'm
if
very
anybody.
Good. I'm very good. You have to ask Roger.
You're on the bill for tomorrow night, is
I
that
am,
right?
Indeed.
You're going to be on the stage?
Yes, I am.
You're doing close-up also
this
year?
No, I'm not. I'm doing some mix and mingle in just a moment. I'm just on my way to the room, and you found me.
Okay.
And then I'm in the stage show tomorrow evening, yes.
Okay. Mm. And you always do some great comedy stuff. Is that what you got planned for tomorrow night?
It will be comedy, yes. I'm going to try to saw a man in half, and I hope it works.
He goes back together, you think?
Because American lawsuits, I do not need one of those.
No, that's true.
Yes.
Andy, thank you very much. I'm going to let you run then. I appreciate you very much, and again, congratulations.
Nice to see you.
Good, you as well. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Mandy Nico. Scotty out. Oh, right on. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And I've got with me another fellow podcaster, Mr. Brian Brushwood. Hey, Brian.
Holy cow, man. It's been too long. This feels weird. It feels weird. Like, considering that I'm practically brothers,
well,
you know?
That's it's right. Like, I feel like you're my son.
I know.
Like, really. I mean, you and Nick, you know, are my
boys. There was a good 2 years where me and Nick were full-on brothers. And
that's
then,
right.
And then,
yeah.
And then of course, I love, you know, keeping up with them. But it's weird to spend, you know, there's that intimacy when you're on the road together. And, of course, we ended up shooting the Brian Brushwood on the Road episodes.
Which was the original thing that went to Scam School.
Exactly,
right?
Right? And you were there from the very beginning.
Yeah.
How amazing was that?
I think that is just super cool, the way that it all worked out. And because I was talking with Nick, you know, about that then today, and I was asking if he'd gone to Dragon Con, because I understand tomorrow, tonight,
dude,
like at 11 o'clock,
I'm going to walk off stage, and 5 hours later, I have to be at the airport. It's going to be stupid.
That's why I thought, if I don't talk to you now,
it's going to be stupid. Yeah,
I'm not going to see you at all.
I'm glad you grabbed.
Because at 11 o'clock, you're going to be like off the hook, I guess, with the live broadcast, or what are you doing with it?
No, as a matter of fact, okay, so we put it on the schedule as Scam School Live, but the nice thing about calling it Scam School Live is we can go in a bunch of different directions. And when I talked to Trixie, I was like, what would be best for you guys? And she says, to be honest, we would like just a really good show.
Yeah.
You know, that anyone from locals can come and watch and so on. So I looked at the schedule, I was like, well, Diamond Jim Tyler's been on Scam School, he's going to be down here.
Yep, David Rangel.
David Rowan, and then I was like, maybe I could call in a favor from Dennis Rogers, the world's strongest man. So he came in from Houston.
Cool.
So we're just going to do an all-star review. I'm super, which of course, you know, between you and me, makes things a little bit easier that, you know, each of us only needs to do our best 10 to 15 minutes. But it's going to be an amazing, amazing show. I'm really excited about it.
I got a little thing I want to show you then a little bit later, too, that you might like that I don't think anybody can do.
By all means, yes. you know, it's so awesome to be, you know, TAOM kind of has like a shortcut in the back of my brain where it's like, you know, TAOM was the first contest I ever won. And of course, I remember I would read your reviews of TAOM at the time 20 years ago.
Yeah, back in Genie.
Yeah, exactly, right? And the moment Trixie called, it was like, well, I'm not going to say no. The answer is yes.
Especially
and then,
when Trixie calls.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. You can't say no to Trixie, full stop, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm so thrilled to be here, and I wish I could have been here for the entire 3 days, but, you know, it's unreal how long it's taken for me to get from that the entrance. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It's a half meter at a time, but eventually we're going to make it to stage and do this thing.
Yes. Now, that's going to be from like 11 until 12, is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a late one. It's 11:30, I believe.
Oh,
so 11:30 to 12:30, on the main stage.
The main stage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're going to be having everything all set up as far as you're going to have lights and cameras? This is like a vlog or something? Or?
We will be shooting it. We'll probably just take some highlights and throw it in a Behind the Scam episode.
Yeah.
But we've got Bonnie will be here shortly, and then we got both of my editors, Bryce and Brant, will be over here, and John, who helps me out with scam stuff.
Yep.
And it's funny because John is, you know, my partner in crime on sort of the retail end of things, and he's never been to a magic conference. Like, this will be his first magic convention to peek in on.
Yeah. He's gone to Dragon Con and all those
things. Yeah, oh, sure. He's gone to all the weirdo things. not our actual business.
Not a real convention.
Yeah, man. No, it's very exciting, and I can't believe how many familiar faces there have been. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I'll bet, because you haven't been in a while, because you were always, you know, traveling about, and you've been, speaking of which, have you got a new Discovery show or something you're working on?
So right now, we're trying to figure out what's next for Hacking the System. Jason and I are sitting on a mountain of material, of stuff that was too dangerous for us to put in. David Rangel is taking off his shirt behind us.
Please.
You win, Rangel. Jason and I are sitting on a mountain of material that was a bit, that hit the cutting room floor for being too dangerous to be on TV.
That they censored, wouldn't let
Yes, exactly. And meanwhile, we're like, this is all really good stuff. Maybe we'll start up a video series. So we'll see where that goes. But in the meantime, I've been told, okay, get this. Of all the things you had pictured me saying I was going to do, I'm going to guess that not at the top of that list is enter a reality dance competition show.
No way. You, Brian Brushwood,
are going to
be dancing with the stars, kind of a thing.
Exactly. There's YouTube's version, basically, of Dancing with the Stars.
Okay.
Is called a Dance Showdown on the YouTube Dance On channel. So I'm going to go out to L.A. for a couple weeks and dance. I can't believe I said that word. That sentence just came out of my mouth. I'm sorry.
I think the internet will explode. I would have to see that. I've never seen you dance.
It's what's funny is I cannot dance. I mean, I do not have any skills in that regard, and that is why I'm attracted to doing this. You know, is because it terrifies
me. Outside of your
comfort
range.
Exactly. Yes. So it's well outside my comfort zone, and because Bonnie's one. And if it weren't for Bonnie, I wouldn't do it. But Bonnie's one complaint is she goes, "How come you dance on the internet with other men but never dance with me?" And so I was like, well, I guess we'll have to fix that.
Yes,
and
exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that's that.
That sounds great. Well, I know you got a lot to do over here, and that I appreciate it. We could sit and talk. In fact, if we had some time.
In fact, call me. You've got my number. I'm available. I'll make time for you.
You
got it, man.
Yes,
of course.
We'll do like a full-hour Skype thing.
That would be amazing. I would love to do that. Although I'd have to insist that Nick joins us. That would be the one thing.
I'll do that.
Okay.
That would be so cool. I like that idea. Okay. Hey, I know Nick's listen to this then, too. So,
good.
Hey, Nick.
Well, tell him.
Love you, man.
I would say tell him, but I'm going to talk to you. Nick Wells. Yeah. Why don't you call me? Call me.
There you go. Thanks a lot. Real quick, that the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your philosophy of life? What is your chi? What do you live by? What's your word?
Fail. Fail in grandiose and wonderful style, and find a safe place to be bad so you can become good. There
Sounds
you go.
Awesome. That's great. Thank you very much. That's Brian Brushwood and Scam School for The Magic Word Podcast, my podcast. We'll get to his later. This is Scotty out.